Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for tuning in to Loretta McNary Live Presents. And, you know, we have a fabulous show today, one that I've already told our distinguished guest that he has challenged me. He has really made me slow down long enough to really get some more knowledge in an area where I have been weak in. I will go ahead and admit the totality of what I'm feeling right now. I've been weak in this area, but I want to remind you about the Loretta McNary Show. You know, we're a premier blog talk radio, actually blog talk, so we are one of the top 300 shows out of 15,000 on the blog talk radio network, so we're very happy about that because our show was created for an empowered, active, and diverse TV, radio, social media, and online listening audience. You know, we launched September 2012 to a great reception, and so we're doing good. We reached that 200,000 listen already, so we're excited about all the great things that are going here. But I just want to tell you about our guest today, and you are going to want to really, really, really take some notes today because we are going to have an amazing conversation. But yeah, it's going to be like going to business school because we have with us John William Templeton. He is the chief economist of IBIS Partners. Mr. Templeton is a nationally known author, historian, and demographer. He is co-founder. This is what I was so excited about when I found the one of the many things. He is co-founder of National Black Business Month, which I didn't even know we had a month, and author of the annual State of Black Business series. Since graduating with honors in journalism from the first freshman class of the Howard University School of Communications, Templeton has won 6 national journalism awards, been the first black editor of a business newspaper, and editor of the first black newspaper to observe a centennial. He is the author of 28 books, including Silicon Chilling, Equal Opportunity in High Technology and Black Money, Advanced Strategies for Maximizing the 1 Trillion Blacks Received Worldwide. His websites include blackmoney.com and blackrestaurant.net. His research has documented low levels of contracting with black on businesses from Hurricane Katrina recovery, the Gulf Spill, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and the 7th annual report for our stimulus State of Black Businesses. Temple describes how some states are actually growing their black business sectors, and that is great news. Welcome to the show, Mr. John William Templeton.
Oh, thank you very much, and congratulations on your success.
Oh, thank you. I'm very, very excited. I have a couple more announcements that I may make during our conversation. It all depends on, you know, where I am, because I just know I'm going to be changed by this conversation, so I'm ready, and I want you to start where you want to start, because, first of all, I want to publicly, again, thank you for the Year of Jubilee book that you sent me. I'm going to read and observe every word of it, and thank you so much for that. And can you just start there, the Year of Jubilee, because I think that's a great place to start.
Well, this is our 10th edition of the State of Black Business, and it's really the starting point for National Black Business Month, because this is a data-driven exercise, and by that I mean that we have a blind spot for African-American businesses. There are television shows and newspapers about the stock market and what's going on with international trade, and we can find out what's going on with every different province in China, factory shuts down or something like that. We have almost no information about African-American businesses, and that's 7% of all businesses in the United States. But from the perspective of the black community specifically, our businesses are really the foundation of our neighborhoods and our communities. And so to the extent that we ignore them, we're really consigning our neighborhoods to decline and to all kinds of other problems. And what we've come to the realization is that every significant issue that we face, from crime to police brutality to education to health, they all kind of go back to the levels and the extent to which we're succeeding in business. And Fred Jordan and I, who is my co-founder for National Black Business Month, we're just trying to get people to prioritize how do we reach a level of economic equity in the business sector, because if we do that, then the 2-to-1 disparity in unemployment is going to disappear. The disparity in unemployment disappears, and we have implications for housing, for health care, for everything else. And so out of all the challenges that we face, we've come to the conclusion if we do this one thing first, then a lot of the other problems will take care of themselves.
Mm. Wow. So how do you determine, I have so many questions, how do you determine which one you do first? Because like you said, lack of jobs and lack of our businesses being very successful or even promoted as such, it has like the domino effect of social ills, you know, the crime, the unemployment rate, you know, and then it goes into the health issues because you can't get good jobs and you can't get health care. So how do you know what to do first?
Well, part of our advantage has been we've analyzed this, and we've analyzed it state by state. And so our State of Black Business report is unique, is that it has data wherever you are. If you're in Utah, if you're in Alaska, we just got a letter from the governor of Alaska complimenting us on our report. And only 1,000 black businesses in Alaska, but everybody gets it. And what we do is we have 10 key factors for black business success, and we evaluate every state on those 10 key factors, and we have a rating for each state on their affinity to black-owned businesses. Then we also have something called 31 Ways, 31 Days, which is something that consumers can do. And we encourage consumers to seek out a black business every day of the month of August. And what we present in Year of Jubilee is a particular industry for people to look at every day of the month, so they don't have to, like, wonder. And then we give them ways to actually find those businesses in that sector. This year, healthcare is such a huge issue for African Americans because with the Affordable Care Act, 5 to 7 million African Americans are going to become health consumers for the first time because they'll be able to get health insurance and they hadn't had it before. So they're going to make a huge impact on the economies of the communities that they live in. That also dovetails with the fact that out of the 2 million black businesses, 400,000 of them are in healthcare. So we have an opportunity to boost our economies, boost our businesses with money that is going to come through federal and state spending. But we just need to be aware of where those businesses are and the importance of it. Back in 2010,
how do we become aware? Because I think that's a huge problem for black businesses. We just don't know all the resources. We don't, like I said when I was speaking with you before air, we don't know what we don't know.
Well, a guy named George Abeloff got Nobel Prize in economics about 10 years ago for a concept of asymmetric information, and it kind of goes to the heart of how racism plays out right now. We saw it in the mortgage. African-American mortgage holders didn't know that there were games being played with the mortgage market, so they got preyed upon. And we actually lost $400 billion of household net worth in the last 5 years because of the impact of the mortgage crisis. Also in the last 5 years, the number of SBA loans to black businesses has fallen almost 80%. So last year, only 1,000 black businesses got SBA loans in the whole country. So so we don't know these facts. So we're out scrambling trying to make it, and things are weighted so heavily against us that it becomes almost impossible to succeed. And so a lot of our focus this year has been on policies, because African-American businesses are getting about $300 million a year in business credit. Their need, based on averages, is $30 billion. So we're only getting 1 cent on the dollar of the business credit that we need. So that's just an impossible situation to compete. So our big proposal that we're focusing on, and we'll be talking about this during our 10th anniversary, is in San Francisco on August 17th, is for the Federal Reserve to take a minimum of $3 billion per month of the quantitative easing that they've been doing. They've been buying $85 billion a month in bonds to prop up the banks and keep the economy going. And that money's just been, you know, largely been you know, creating speculative bubbles, because it goes into Wall Street and it doesn't come down to the community. So Wall Street's been, you know, just having a great party for the last 5 or 7 years, you know, with the Federal Reserve, you know, easy money policy. But the money isn't getting down to the communities where they need it. So part of what we identify in State of Black Business Report is that everybody understands that the lack of credit is a problem. So in about half of the states, they have created specific loan programs targeted to black businesses or minority businesses. In Florida, they call it the Black Business Investment Fund. And other states like Tennessee, they call it the Minority Business Loan Fund, that sort of thing. So if the Federal Reserve can use the quantitative easing to create a secondary market for the loans that are generated by those programs that have a track record of pretty good success, because they not only make the loans, but they do counseling and sort of wraparound services around the businesses to make sure that they are able to grow and thrive, then we can generate the kind of business credit that African-American businesses need. And once we have that credit availability, what we'll see is people who are qualified to go in business but have decided to take a safe, you know, job with the government or a corporation or something like that, come in and they'll be able to create larger businesses than the ones that we do now. You know, part of the mistake that's been made in minority business policy is they take people who never started a business, don't have any background, and give them a 6-week class and say, go out and start a business, and then, you know, then they fail, and then they say, well, we told you. It's like, no. You know, people who start businesses generally work for somebody else. They rise to management. They accumulate some personal capital and connections and that sort of thing. You know, many times they'll buy an existing business. But those are the kinds of people who are most likely to succeed in business. And fortunately, one of the good parts is that we have a wave of about 3 million people who are really the first generation of African-American business managers came into jobs in the 70s and 80s who were, you know, into their middle ages and basically have everything in their favor. And that's the group of people that we should be encouraging to either go into business or to become advisors to younger business people. And that's a real reservoir that we have. But they're not going to jump into it unless there's access to credit. So if we improve the credit flow to black businesses, then you know, our projection is that we can create 1 million jobs in 4 years, and that would eliminate the disparity in unemployment.
Okay, let me ask, I want to ask a couple of questions based on what you were just saying, and I hate to even ask questions because I just want you to keep going because I'm just so fascinated by what we're talking about. Okay, you mentioned that when they get the loan, they get these six-week classes and then the businesses go under. Who takes the full, is the responsibility or the reason the businesses fell, is that responsibility spread across the people who also gave the six-week classes, or are the business owners taking the full responsibility of why their businesses failed? Because if you're only giving somebody 6 weeks and then you just push them out the door with nothing else, then the chances are they're not going to be as successful or successful at all.
Well, if you know, one of the things we've done with the State of Black Business is we compare how minority business programs have been run with how states do economic development, and it's completely different. So when BMW decides they want to go into South Carolina, you know, they don't have to fill out an application and get certified and sit around and wait for somebody to call them. The state, you know, goes to them, asks, well, what do you need, you know, what do you need in terms of training, what do you need in terms of transportation, what do you need in terms of financing, that sort of thing. And the state puts together a package of all those things, wraps it up on a bow, and then the CEO comes in and they have a conference and they say, okay, this is when we open. You know, many times the state pays for the construction of the factories and that sort of thing. That's how business development is done, not only here but around the world, and there's a competition to do that. So the way that we approach minority businesses is a way that is guaranteed to get the results that we've been getting. And so what we've been encouraging states to do, and this is what our 10 key factors for black business success has pushed states to do, is to treat black businesses the same way you treat other businesses. So one of the things that we rate states higher on is your minority business program in your economic development department. You know, is it tied to the governor's office? You know, does the governor put his weight? We found that the number one most important factor, you know, for a state is whether the governor is involved in it, whether the governor puts his personal prestige behind it. So the states that do very well, they have a conscious, visible presence. You know, in Maryland, you know, you have the Office of Minority Affairs that is in the governor's office, where the responsibility of minority business is in the governor's office, right? So we rate Maryland the highest. In Virginia and in Texas, which are rated, you know, tied for second. Virginia has a Department of Minority Business Enterprise. That's a cabinet department. Texas has a program where they do quarterly tracking of their procurement spending with minority businesses. They spend, you know, a couple $1 billion with black-owned businesses through the state government, and they make a report on it every quarter. So when the top person sends a signal, this is a big deal, this is important, then it flows down to everybody else. And so those, but that's the same thing that happens in the larger economy. And so it's really not anything that's very esoteric. It's like, okay, if you do the same things for black businesses that you do for other businesses, you'll get the same kind of results.
But is it feasible or is it realistic to think that all businesses, all black businesses could get that same kind of royalty treatment, I call it, or are those just businesses that are scalable?
Well,
should all businesses be created equal like that, or just a scalable
one? Actually, it's not. They aren't. Our big focus that we're looking at in our program on August 17th, how do we create some billion-dollar black businesses? Because the reality of it is that the people who get listened to are billionaires. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg has a press conference. Everybody and their mama comes to listen, or Warren Buffett or anything like that. Well, I mean, you know, we have very few. But just see the impact that Oprah has by herself, just because she's been able to reach that stage. But there are a handful of African Americans at that level, and there are thousands of other folks. So we are very focused on, we've identified a group of companies we call our tech swag companies, and we'll be actually,
I love that term,
those companies to investors in San Francisco on the 17th, because we've gone around the country, we've done Black Innovation Month every April and gone out and found companies that have intellectual property or some good concepts and that sort of thing, and try to identify which companies can grow to be global scale, because the way business works is you need anchors. And this is the other mistake that we make. We go out and send an individual black business out to rise or fail on their own. If you look at business districts, they're usually clusters. So you might see all the car dealers, all the automakers in Detroit, all the technology companies in Silicon Valley. So, and the reason that happens is that there's a whole community of things that are needed for an industry. So, similar industries tend to locate next to each other. So, we have to have companies that are big enough to be a magnet for clusters, and the area that we think is prime for African Americans, and we'll be focusing on the 17th, is healthcare. We've got a company called Ramsell in Oakland, California, that started as a pharmacy back in 1962, and then they got into processed AIDS prescription drugs back in the early 80s. Now they process 40% of all the AIDS prescriptions in the country. They're operating in 16 states. With the Affordable Care Act, there's just a whole number of business opportunities that are created. There's a company in Atlanta called BCA, Business Computer Applications. It was founded 37 years ago. And they were one of the first to design digital health records. So they're in a great position to grow and expand. And then when you look at the mainstream market, healthcare, you have the CEO of Kaiser is African American, CEO of Merck is African American, CEO of Dignity Health is African American. So you have a synergy between the fact that the largest number of black businesses are in healthcare, and the fact that one of the few sectors where we've had some inclusion at the executive level is healthcare. And the market is regulated by the federal government, which has the ability to encourage inclusion. So healthcare is the area where we could not only grow to be large scale, but it also creates a lot of jobs. I mean, health IT is going to create thousands of jobs. And these are jobs that are basically needed everywhere, because every hospital needs people entering data and doing that. So, so there's opportunity to create, fairly large healthcare businesses in every community in the country, and every community in the country needs those kind of businesses. So if African Americans don't go into those kind of businesses, somebody else is going to come in and actually take those dollars away. So we're really keenly focused on healthcare. We're also looking at renewable energy. We've got a lot of folks who have some patents in some of those fields. But we're looking at the industries where people can not only reach a global market, but also create a lot of jobs.
Right. I love that. But I'm also curious, because you talk a lot about, you said that about technology. How do we fare when it comes to technology as a community of people? Are we in the game?
Actually, we are. As I mentioned earlier, African Americans generally have been making the choice that government work has been a safer road for them. So in the federal government, 20% of all the technology workers in the federal government are African American. When we did our 50 most important African Americans in technology earlier this year, there are almost two dozen African Americans who are either chief information officer or deputy chief information officer at federal agencies, and many of them graduated from historically black colleges and universities. So we actually have a big lever. Now, those figures aren't replicated in private industry. In Silicon Valley, less than 2% of the workers are African American. So one of the reasons that we're doing our event out here in the middle of the area, you know, we'll be going over to the Twitter building and that sort of thing, is to remind the people who are putting money into the startups and that sort of thing. It's like, hey, guess what? Your customer, you know, at NASA or Department of Defense, is usually going to be somebody black who graduated from Howard University or North Carolina A&T. So you better start doing business with some black-owned firms, or they're going to find somebody else who will. And so it's a matter of using the data to maximize the advantages that we have. There's 600,000 African-Americans who work in technology, 31,000 black technology firms, but once again, they haven't been getting the capital. And we have a tradition of innovation in software, in hardware. We did a documentary for a television network on Jerry Lawson, who's the African American who invented the first video game. You know, nobody knew about it. Roy Clay, who did the first fault tolerant computer, has a company that does electronic test equipment for the last 35 years. So the talent is there. It's just a matter of matching the capital. This is an area where we think that there can be a lot of growth, but we think healthcare is the area where we can have the most immediate impact.
Okay. I like that. I really, really like that. I want to talk now about your innovation, your impact innovation ending inequity. Can you talk about the whole business of the National Black Business Month and your Catapulting Innovation Showcase?
Sure. Like I said, it's been data driven, and getting the information basically gives us the ability to influence policy. So, the 10th anniversary event we're doing on Saturday, August 17th in San Francisco, is geared to attract policymakers and financiers to support our goal to get the Federal Reserve to put money into black business capital. So we want to make the case for that. We also want to present about 20 or so companies that we think are going to grow to be billion-dollar companies. And we want to just give economic development professionals the opportunity to really learn what the best practices are for growing black-owned businesses. And, you know, without that kind of thorough grounding in the best practices, you know, we're just not going to get the results. And so a lot of money is being wasted around the country because people do things that look like they're doing something, but they're not really effective. And we realize that there's enough money available to create the jobs and to make communities look the way that we want them to look, but it's just not being spent correctly. And so we want to reallocate the capital and make sure that people who are making the decisions actually understand what black businesses are. I mean, first of all, most of them don't even talk about it. Wall Street Journal's doing a CEO forum this week. Yeah, I think it's two black people invited. Mm. So they're not even talking about it. I mean, it's not even a concern. I went to a summit that Harvard had back in May on impact investing, and folks like Larry Summers and folks were there. And it was really about, just kind of opening their eyes. It's like, we have talent. We have, the reason our communities are in the economic condition we are is not because African Americans aren't interested in business, not because we don't have talent, it's because we don't have the capital coming into our community. So, and that was just a eye-opener. They just never heard that before because they had been stuck on their stereotypes. And we've also been talking with some of the economists at the Hoover Institution in Stanford. So I've been joking with folks. I talked to liberals at Harvard and talked to conservatives at Stanford. Neither one of them knew about black businesses. So, but these are people who make policy. Mm-hmm.
Have we not done a great job at getting lobbyists or, connecting to policymakers? Have we not done a great job? Why aren't we doing a better job at that? Or are we doing a good job and it's just not noticeable or being heard?
Well, it all starts with the State of Black Business Report because we didn't have the data. When Fred Jordan came to me in 2004, he was chair of the National Black Chamber of Commerce, and he said, I go out and talk for black business. I don't have any information. I don't have any data. No, I don't know what I'm talking about, right? Mm-hmm. So he said, go do the State of Black Business Report. And I said, well, it can't be done. I mean, nobody's collecting the information and all that sort of thing. He said, go do it, right? So it really was a challenge for me to create something that didn't exist and to be able to find information in all 50 states about African American businesses, and so we were able to rise to the challenge and to be able to create something. And what we have seen is that policymakers have been responding to the data because the psychology of it is that nobody wants to be first. So when you see that Texas is doing something and Florida is doing something and Mississippi has a minority loan program, then, if you're in Oregon, you say, well, if Mississippi can do it, then we can do it. And so that's where the information flow comes in, because somebody somewhere is addressing all these problems. So we just need to find out, who's doing it?
Who that someone is?
And then spread it around the country.
Let me ask you this,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, so to answer your question, the best thing that people can do is to get our report and make sure that you're able to coherently talk to the policymakers in your area. And we've actually sent a letter to every governor and told them, what their rating is, what they can do better and that sort of thing. And like I said, we've been pleasantly surprised by the fact that people who you would never even thought would think about black businesses, they appreciate our approach to it. It's like when it's data-driven, people can respond to data as opposed to, charges and allegations and all that sort of thing. I mean, it's about the numbers. It's like, okay,
absolutely.
You're spending money to put people in prison, but if you increased the number of black businesses that were in construction, your prison population is going to drop because those people will be, you know, building buildings instead of, you know, knocking people in the head. So, you know, and so everybody responds to those kinds of numbers, but we haven't had those numbers to present before, and now that we have, it's like, you know, we're seeing movement.
So is there a huge disparity? Because, you know, we hear a lot about the spending power of the black community, the African-American community. We have, like, spending power that's crazy. It stacks up to people, you know, in other countries that we have this much spending power. However, there's such a disparity to me when it comes to black businesses being supported. If we have the money, but then we have the state of black businesses at a low, or at least in our mind, based on what we've been hearing, is at a low, but I know you have some information to tell us something different, and we got to get to that too. So how do we connect those dots?
Well, 31 ways, 31 days is our strategy to put it in terms that people can easily understand it, you know, away from just the kind of big, you know, you ought to support black businesses. Like, no, on this day, go find a black dentist. You know, on this day, go find a black restaurant. And so 2 years ago, you know, rather than telling people, oh, you ought to go find a black restaurant, we did a book called Say Grace and, you know, and Wipe Your Hands. That was a list of all the black restaurants in the country. So you know, you could tell people that all the time, but unless you provided a tool that told them where they were, they couldn't do anything with it. And so every year we figure out, okay, well, what aspect of that can we address, and we try to give people the tools so that they can do it, rather than just kind of talking about it in the abstract. It's like, okay, black restaurants, you know, hire a lot of people, generate, but they don't have resources for marketing. So if we do this book that lists all where all the black restaurants are, it not only helps the consumers, but it also helps people like restaurant critics. So one of the things that's happened since we've done the book is you've been seeing a lot more black chefs on television. Somebody like Tanya Holland in Oakland, she's on Today Show practically every week. You know, and you know, just because they found the food and love it. I mean, I was at a cookie bakery in San Francisco yesterday, and one of the larger restaurants across town is buying their cookies and using it for dessert just because they were able to find out about them. So there's a lot of talent in our communities, and unless you're able to give it visibility, then what happens is people come in and steal their ideas and put it on their menus. And so we want to make sure that it's known who's doing these innovations and make sure that people can participate. But that also goes back to our larger issue of having large black companies. We've realized after 10 years of trying to push consumers to go to businesses is that, you know, demand gets driven by marketing. So you got to have a marketing budget to get people to go in the doors, which means you got to have companies that are large enough to do that. So that's another reason why we need chains like Golden Crust out of New York City, Lowell Hawthorne started, and he called himself the Patty Man. He's gone from one Caribbean bakery to 120 in 9 states. And so he's able to do kind of marketing in any area that he goes in. He just did a book called The Baker's Son. So we, you know, in order to really change that dynamic, we need large national black businesses that are doing nationwide marketing campaigns that, yeah, because consumers aren't going to do that on their own. There's too many other people advertising to them to get their dollars before they, you know, voluntarily walk to a individual place. You got to have businesses that are large enough to really reach those markets, and that's another reason why we're focused on creating large black businesses as opposed to, you know, just kind of generally saying, okay, let's create another million mom and pop stores. It's like, no.
I'm so glad you said that. But we have a caller.
25 companies that are national scale, then we'll find that the smaller businesses grow in their wake.
Right. That's a critical point, and I want us to spend some time there. We have some callers. I don't know if they're just listening via their phone or they have some questions. So I'm going to take one, and then I want us to go back to what you just said about creating large businesses, and then I'll share, because I don't understand why people don't want their businesses to be large. They want the mom and pop. But we'll talk about that. I'm going to go to the phone lines now. I'm going to area code 574-596. You are on the air with Loretta McNary and Mr. John Templeton. Hi there. Did you have a question or a comment, or are you just listening?
Loretta?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I was just listening, and I was going to wait until he finished talking about the mom and pop stores and not want to enlarge. And you know where I am in my business and everything. So right now I'm just all ears, and I'm very thankful for this.
Okay, who am I speaking with?
This is LaTanya.
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad you're on the line. Okay, what I'll do is we'll have that conversation part now, and then I'll bring you back in so you can chime in with us.
Thank you.
How about that? Okay.
Great.
Okay, Mr. Templeton. Yeah, because I think that's critical, because that's the mindset that I work a lot with our Mid-South Minority Business Consortium here, and the mindset is that they want to be small. They don't want to be more than a mom and pop, more than a corner grocery store, more than, you know, just one hair salon. They just want to stay there as opposed to, you know, becoming a large, scalable business. Can you tell us why you think that mentality exists and what we can do to get rid of it?
Well, I mean, it's the access to credit, but it's also who's creating businesses. You know, we have people creating businesses who are artisans who basically just want to work for themselves and may not be able to, you know, work for other people's. And so, that's going to be the largest number of businesses. I mean, most, 99% of businesses are very small businesses. So there's nothing wrong with that. But if you don't have somebody who has a factory down the street from your barbershop, the barbershop ain't gonna thrive. So in order to make the barbershop work, you got to have somebody who's actually creating jobs. But the other piece of it is that every business should see themselves as a brand as opposed to a location. So in our first Black Business Month, we did an exhibit in San Francisco on the 60 black-owned restaurants in San Francisco. Blew everybody away. Nobody knew that there were 60 black restaurants in San Francisco. I mean, we actually had to take one of our city council people in a van and personally had to take her to all 60 of them because she didn't believe it.
Wow.
Right? But one of those restaurants started that year, and they became one of the food and wine top 10 restaurants in the country. And
cool.
So every year since then, they've been profitable through the recession and all that sort of thing. Tourists come from all over the world. It's called Farmer Brown. And what they did was a tribute to black agriculture. So they did, just made it look like it was 1910 and, you know, rustic stuff around and all that sort of thing. And people who you would think would have no interest in soul food got to come there.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've been able to take that brand and open a couple more restaurants around the city. And so when you create a brand, then you create an opportunity for new products. Last year we did the 50 top names in black food to start Black Business Muffin. So so we tied it in with Sylvia Woods' 50th anniversary. She actually died a couple weeks before that, so we kind of combined a funeral and a bunch of other things. Marcus Samuelson was there. But in Harlem, what you have is some great examples of the restaurants understanding that they're brands. So Red Rooster, you know, Marcus Samuelson's restaurant, you know, it's a brand, you know. You know, Sylvia's is in, you know, they start one little restaurant. Now they have canned goods in grocery stores all over the country. So there's no reason. Glory Foods, you know, people are familiar with Glory Foods. Glory Foods started with one restaurant in Columbus, Ohio. So if you go to the trouble of creating something that is good enough that people will come and spend money on it, then you want to do it to industrial scale, because if people will come and spend money on it in your town, they'll do it everywhere else. And so part of what I teach people to do is when you create that business, create it as a brand, because now we have online. So the Neely's, the Neely's Barbecue in Memphis, right?
Yes.
You can buy all their products online. So, you know, they got, you know, I guess you have three restaurants in Tennessee, but you can buy, you know, the brisket and the links and all that sort of thing because they created a brand. Another good example, the Ben's Chili Bowl in Washington, D.C., they've been there for 50 years. You can buy the half smokes online. You can buy them at the Redskins Stadium. You can buy them at the Washington National Stadium. It's a brand. And when people come to Washington, D.C., they lined up all around the block, you know, just because of
I've heard that. Yes. Ben's Chili Bowl. Yeah.
So they're all.
You know what? You are speaking my language now.
Restaurants,
yeah.
But they created brands. And
brand.
So
like Sweetie Pies, you know, Sweetie Pies was just she became a brand, and then people heard about her, and now she's on OWN Network. So that's and I want to bring LaTanya in now because she is creating a brand, and I told her she already has one. She's already experienced some successes, but I want to bring her on because she probably has some questions for you. But while we're bringing her on, I just I read the first page of your book, The Year of Jubilee. And 2013 is, and this is, I'm reading from your introduction page, 2013 is a year which resonates with the great milestones of human freedom. It is the 150th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation, the 100th anniversary of the first print reference to jazz music, and the 50th anniversary of the San Francisco Freedom Movement and the March on Washington. So I love how that book started because I had forgotten that. I learned it in history or my mom's history lesson that she taught us about African American Black history. And that is, I love that. That is huge for me. So I want to bring LaTanya on so she can, and I'm sure she has some questions or comments to make now that we've had that conversation. Welcome here, LaTanya. Hi, are you ready for your comment? LaTanya, are you there? Okay, maybe she stepped away from her phone, but she's still on, so I'll just leave her available.
Okay,
to,
I'm here, Loretta.
Okay, there you go.
Hello? Okay, hi. I've been listening, and then you know where I am right now is the branding, and I was a little skeptical of that part because I was afraid of what I was going to have to encounter as far as the financing and you know, realizing as far as marketing, I do need to brand, and it is going to cost, but I do realize that is what I needed to get out of, you know, a small city or to get out of the regular mindset of the mom and pop store. So that was just really confirmation for me that you know, I am going in the right direction for this and, you know, kind of getting past my fear and everything and creating the brand and everything. You know, you think of the Neelys and like you were saying, Sylvia's and Sweetie Pies, and we just think they just got out there. But they absolutely did have to brand themselves in order for their business to, you know, be relocated to other cities and states and countries and, you know, to be nationally known like they are now. So right now,
and like you said, marketing drives that. Marketing drives that. So you're going to have a marketing budget. Let him kind of, you didn't tell him what you do. Here's one thing I had to tell you. You got to almost be, talk about that King's brand that you have.
Right. I can't say I invented, but I took a recipe, a family recipe of a cream cheese pound cake, and I had it formulated into a quick mix. But what I did with the mix, I just worked on it so to where, you know, once, because I know how the pound cakes, how it's known and greatly in the African, you know, American communities and homes and churches and everything, and everybody used to come over to, you know, buy her cakes, or, you know, basically she would just bake them and give them away. So I wanted everybody to have that same experience without all the legwork, but it actually tastes like a cream cheese pound cake from scratch. And not just saying that because I made it, but I made sure that I worked on that product, so, and other products to get that that fact, that feel, that taste and everything that a person would just assume, you know, a grandmother, you know, old person in the church, you know, would make, that you only go to for those kind of recipes. So I kind of made it to where you could bring it to your home. It doesn't matter if you're a good cook or not a cook at all, but just wanted something that everybody be able to experience on their level without the hard work, you know, involved in it.
Yeah, Amy Hilliard has done something similar with comfort cakes, making pound cakes out of Chicago. So like I said, I mean, there are several examples of people who succeeded with that. So it's just a matter, and part of what, you know, one of the reasons why businesses need our State of Black Business report is that black businesses generally don't have the data that they need for business plans. And so what our State of Black Business report does is give you some operating ratios, gives you a history of what other people have done around the country, so you can actually make, you know, so you can actually know what's going to work, and so that everybody's not wasting their time with trial and error. So, I mean, like I said, Sylvia's has done it, Amy Hilliard has done it, you know, Baldwin Richardson has done it. So there are enough people who have done this in advance, so you don't have to start from scratch.
Right, and I have followed the Comfort Cake. I followed her for years, and then what I have just recently started doing is using a PR company within my budget, like you stated earlier, to brand and market my King Preferred name.
And one of the reasons we set up National Black Business Month the way it is, is a platform for people to really establish those brands. Because what happens around the country is we send out information to all the business editors around the country. And what happens is they then take our data and our report, and then they go look for businesses in their community that they can do features on. And everything. And so the whole idea of National Black Business Month is to give people that opportunity to get the visibility, and through 31 days, 31 ways, you know, we have a lot of people who will actually go visit a black restaurant every day of the month. And so the whole idea of that is create a habit of people visiting those places so that you get that pattern of repeat business. So it's actually designed to actually give companies that leg up to create the brands and to create the kind of dedicated customers that you need.
Oh, great. And one thing I have noticed.
How can you get a copy of the book?
Oh, you can go to blackmoney.com and just follow the prompts. Or if you have any questions, just send me an email, and we'll make sure you can order it.
Thank you. Let's sure will.
Give
appreciate
out your contact
that.
Information.
But for you know, basically the information in the book, you'd probably have to pay somebody $25,000 to generate it for you.
Say that again, please. I'm sorry.
The information in the book, you probably have to pay somebody $25,000 to generate it for you.
And I know I would. I know because the money I spent so far, I mean, it's been a lot on trial and error.
And the advantage of us doing one book that everybody can use around the country, whether you're in technology or restaurants, is everybody gets a level playing field where they can really understand, you know, what it takes to succeed.
Yes. Well, I appreciate that, and I will go online to blackmoney.com to order my book. I am excited.
Thank you.
Thank you, Loretta.
Good. Thank you so much for listening. I'm going to put you back on hold so you can continue to listen. We only have about 5 minutes left in the show. So, okay, Mr. Templeton, we have covered a lot of ground. I want to ask you to let people know how they can find you for more information and how to purchase your book and follow everything that you're doing.
Well, like I said, blackmoney.com is a good place to start. One of the other things that we do in my actual I'm a textbook publisher by my main line of business, and we're launching nationally a educational television network called The Union, and we're trying to get it in as many school districts as possible because the objective of it is to close the achievement gap and to give African-American kids the kind of knowledge that they need to compete. Because one of the problems that black businesses have is they can't find trained workers because, you know, many of the people they should be hiring are sitting in juvenile hall and jails and things. And that's a direct result of the failures of the school districts. So we've created Reunion Education Arts Heritage, and we want to encourage parents to get involved in making sure that that's available to their kids, the 4 hours a day of video instruction. For instance, you know, only 0.6% of black students in the country take calculus. And so, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's just unacceptable. So, but we don't have people with the cultural competency to teach math to our kids. And so those are some of the areas that we're able to give some good content that is compelling to our kids and really gets them in the right mindset to take charge of their own futures.
Well, I really want to encourage everybody to really go to Black Money, his website, and to get this book, because I'm telling you, it will change you. I'm so changed. I am more excited about possibilities. And really, I love this. The end on the first page that you wrote about our capabilities. So I kind of wanted to end the show on a really optimistic note. And you said, we just need to believe in our own capacity. Year of Jubilee lets us know what that capacity is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said,
so knowing all that you know and all the numbers and all that. So you still are optimistic about the state of black businesses, knowing, because you probably know more than most people on the planet about black businesses, but yet you're optimistic about it?
Absolutely. I mean, we've been in a war and we haven't even picked up the gun yet. You know, so when we realize we had a war, I mean, we'll do fine. I mean, just think about 1936 and no blacks had competed in the Olympics, and what every field that we've been able to enter, and all the examples that you'll find in State of Black Business, you know, we have the examples of the face of black business. These are people who are doing quite well, and it's just a matter of us understanding, you know, what our capabilities are and what the strategies are to succeed.
Oh, that is so awesome. I'm so glad you came on. Please tell me you will be our guest again, because there is so much ground to cover, and I want to have that conversation again here on Loretta McNary Live. If you will please say yes to that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
all right, Mr. Templeton.
We can do it again during August so we can cover some more topics.
Definitely. We will definitely be in touch with you to get on your schedule for that. Thank you so much for your time and your knowledge. And thank you all so much for listening to Loretta McNary Live. As always, think positive, dream big dreams, help someone along the way, and we'll talk to you the very next time on Loretta McNary Live. Thank you so much.